but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
One of the questions I got in the Monday mailbag at johncanzano.com yesterday related to umpiring. And I get it. People are frustrated. They can see more games in high definition than ever before in history. Camera angles, automated ball strike system, slow motion replays. I mean, imagine for a second if you had that kind of technology and scrutiny looking over your shoulder in whatever profession you're working in. I wouldn't like it. ABS, balls and strikes. Question came, is this the worst balls and strikes season for umpires in Major League Baseball history? I pushed back against it, but I'm not a former Major League Baseball umpire. Our next guest is. Dale Scott did it at the highest level. Former umpire in Major League Baseball. Retired after the 2017 season. This guy who began umpiring in his teenage years and then into the minor leagues and worked his way up into AAA and then the big leagues and became a full-time umpire in 1986. Dale Scott umpired in the World Series three times, in the All-Star Game three times, including calling balls and strikes, and he's here to talk about umpiring in general. Where are you today, Dale Scott?
Well, I almost missed this, John. I was on the side of the road eating berries.
I love it. I love it. Thanks for making time, man.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, well, you know, I saw that on your Substack, you know, even before I read the part where you said, you know, maybe Jimmy or I would chime in, I was already formulating some kind of an answer. You know, I get this question all the time about the ABS system and about, you know, the technology and everything. And it's, you know, it's tough to be an umpire these days.
Help us with the strike zone, because we tune in on our 85-inch HGTV monitor. We've got high-definition cameras trained on the screen, and there's that box. There's the strike zone. From the comfort of my living room, I can see if the ball goes and touches any part of that box, that's a strike. But what are we looking at? That is a two-dimensional object that's on the screen. What are you seeing as an umpire when you're behind the plate?
Well, you pointed out two-dimensional. The strike zone is three-dimensional. And that right there is obviously a difference. You know, not to, like I said on the reply yesterday, but not to get too far into the weeds here, but you got to understand exactly what the definition of a strike is and the parameters of it. And part of that is the fact that a baseball is in diameter almost 3 inches. It's 2.86 to 2.94 inches. So it's almost 3 inches in diameter. And the rule says that any time that any part of the ball crosses over any part of the plate within the zone, it is by rule a strike. So that 17-inch plate, which is obviously consistent, in effect is almost 3 inches on each side more, because if any part of the ball, you know, crosses over it. So that makes the plate almost, 23 inches wide. Not quite, but so it's a little wider than, you know, than what you think it is. Now, the on-screen layered strike zone is the bane of our existence because it's just not accurate. It's not 100% accurate. It's a facsimile of the zone. But here's a couple of fallacies about it. First of all, it cannot change in real time the height of the of each hitter. And you got to, again, understand that the strike, a strike is, by definition, when the batter is prepared to swing at a pitched ball. So the strike zone can change not only per hitter, you know, with the different size of the batters, but also, you know, by pitch. Because if a guy squares to bunt, his strike zone now as he attempts to bunt the ball is different than his strike zone if he attempts to swing away at the ball. So that right there cannot be done in real time by the ABS system. So what baseball has done is they have literally measured every single major league player, and they have some kind of formula or whatever, and that's how they determine each player as he comes up, his you know, low and high lines on his strike zone. Just a sidebar, when I was working, when we would get our evaluation after working a play job, if I worked the plate Tuesday night, I didn't get those numbers till Wednesday. And the reason it took that long is because they had to have a real life technician go in and look at every pitch that the system said that I missed to make sure that the lines were correct on the hitter, the high and low line, because again, that can't be done in real time. So you have all that going on there. The other thing is on this on-screen layered zone is, if a ball is just off the line, let's say outside, is that really outside? Is that line giving the almost 3 inches that the ball diameter is? Or is, you know, if it's not, then that pitch that's just off the line actually is probably a strike, even though it doesn't show that on the screen. A funny thing happened, I think it was 2 years ago, John, on my Facebook page, I showed the exact same pitch. It was a St. Louis at the New York Mets game. Bases loaded, 3-2 count for a Mets hitter. The pitch came in, and the umpire called ball four. He had the ball high. On the Mets telecast, their layered on-screen strike zone had it just above the line, indicating that it was, in fact, high. The exact same pitch on the St. Louis telecast had it touching the line, and according to their strike zone on the screen, it should have been strike three. And that's what the St. Louis people, saw. So what I'm trying to, again, emphasize is that on-screen strike zone is not 100%. It can vary from broadcast, whoever's producing the broadcast, and it is not in real time doing a high-low, compensating for the height of the hitter and when he's attempting to swing or bunt the ball. So all that is happening. It's just a tool to give you a facsimile of the strike zone. But the problem is, John, and anybody else, people see what they see. And if it's just off the line and called a strike, they're going to say, oh, my God, what's he looking at? It's outside or whatever. And quite frankly, we don't know if it was outside. It could have been actually within the zone.
Dale Scott, our guest, longtime Major League Baseball umpire. Pitchers will tell you in your era that certain umpires had different zones. How did you establish what your strike zone was? Did you pay attention to other umpires? It seems now it's become more standardized with the box on the screen and ABS in play. But how did that work in your era?
Well, there's no doubt, John, that the strike zone is being called the most consistent from, for all 76 staff umpires and all the call-up AAA umpires than it ever has been. And, part of that, too, is, when we started getting evaluated by this, it wasn't called the ABS system, but it was the same thing. Questech was the first generation of this thing. This was in the early 2000s. So I'd already been in the big leagues 15-plus years, and it drastically changed what was accepted or what was being called strikes at that point. We all know, and I see it every time I see a classic game on. I'll be behind the plate in a game in the 90s, and I'll think, oh my God, how am I calling that a strike? Because it was, by today's standards, way outside. But it was, again, that was kind of the way it was then. But the strike zone got too far wide and not very high, and it needed to come back to something more that resembled the definition of a strike zone. And that's what the Quest Tech or what the computerized system did. It uniformed the zone much more to every umpire. Part of the reason they did that in the early 2000s is because they had combined both the National and American League umpires in the 2000 season, and so they wanted a much more uniformed strike zone. One of the other reasons they did it was because teams didn't see umpires nearly as often as they used to when we just worked American League or just worked National League. And you're absolutely right. There are pitchers are known to have a little book on umpires that this guy likes to call that the low pitch, or this guy inside, or whatever notes they had. I would be fascinated to read. I would love to read some of those little black books that the pitchers had, just to I just wondered what their outlook was on my zone. But to answer your question, did I watch other guys? Not really. I was trying to perfect the zone as I interpreted it behind the plate every time I went out there, and tried to be as consistent as ever. One of the big changes, it used to be as long as you were consistent, people were happy. Now consistency means nothing. You have to be accurate, 100% accurate, because the technology is right there to check you in real time on every pitch.
What was it like when you got a pitcher who could do, Greg Maddux comes to mind. I know he was a National League guy, but what was it like when you were behind the plate and you got a pitcher who really understood your zone and you could feel him kind of working at the edges of that zone?
There was some, Frank Viola was great at that. Tommy John. Tommy John, early in my career, he would, this was after obviously the famous surgery named after him, but he didn't have a lot of velocity, but he sure knew how to pinpoint a baseball. His location was amazing. And what he would do early in the game is he would throw a pitch outside, and, you call a strike, let's say, and then a little bit farther outside. He wanted to know where that edge was for that umpire. And once he knew where that was, then he would flirt with that edge, the rest of the game, especially if he was on that day. Frank, like I said, Viola was that way. They had enough finesse, a location, a command for their location of putting the baseball, that they would kind of just see where you're at on the knee, see where you're at on the outside corner, and then, if you're doing your job, you're consistently calling, that corner or that knee pitch the same way, and then they will just use that to deliver to hitters. So coming up and all through my career, my biggest thing was to be obviously I want to be accurate, but I also want to be as consistent as possible, because that's what hitters and pitchers, that's what they depend on. They may not like your zone, but if they know where it's at, then they can make their adjustments and do what they have to do. And it's a little bit different now. Now, if you, according to the computerized system, or whatever, if you call a pitch just off the plate, a strike, my God, that's even though if you're consistently calling that for everybody, that doesn't cut it anymore. Everybody wants it, exactly where the zone is defined.
Umpires are going to miss calls. It's going to happen.
Absolutely.
you'll hear players talk about rising to meet a big moment, bearing down when, in the eighth or ninth inning or in the fourth quarter of a football game. As an umpire, did you do that? I mean, you want to be good all the time, but in a big situation, do you find yourself going, okay, the bases are loaded, here comes a 3-2 pitch, I really need to be on this pitch?
Yeah, you do. You're right, umpires are going to miss pitches, they're going to miss plays, it happens, we're human. The key is to try to do that, if it's going to happen, in a non-situational pitch or play. And what I mean by that is, and I wrote this yesterday, you have a nobody on first pitch at the bottom of the second that is outside and you call a strike. And nobody probably flinches because it's kind of a nothing pitch, right? But that exact same pitch that you call a strike off the plate with the tying run at second base in the eighth inning, now the whole place explodes, right? It's the same miss, but it's a much bigger miss because of the situation. It's a situational miss. And you'll see that a lot of times with pitchers and catchers where they really need the strike. They really need the strike, and they just miss, and it's called a ball, and they'll react. And it's the same pitch that's been called a ball, throughout the game, but they react differently this time. Mm. Why? Because it's a situation, such a bigger situation. They really wanted that pitch. So, yeah, there are times that I would just talk to myself. I say, focus, dude, focus. You know, and even let's say I had a questionable pitch call on a real big at bat late in the game. Okay, guess what? There's another one coming. I gotta get rid. You know, I gotta flush that right now. Focus on this next pitch. It doesn't matter what you did there. You can deal with that, you know, after the game, look at it on video, see what you did wrong or whatever. But that's right now is not the time to do that. I got to focus on this next one. And I would tell myself to, you know, this is a situation. Do not miss the pitch, you know. And it's, you know, everybody, every umpire, just like any player, they have a different way of focusing in certain situations, a different way of re-energizing themselves, if that's the right term. But you know, I think many umpires do the same thing. They have a way of just kind of put you back into what, you know, the moment right now. And yes, this isn't the second inning with nobody on. This is the ninth inning with you know, tying runs on, and you gotta you know, don't. This is not the time to miss anything. So focus, and that's what I would do.
When you do miss one, sometimes you'll see the pitcher react. Sometimes you see the catcher react. The catcher will double clutch as they go to throw the ball back to the pitcher. I've sometimes caught that the umpire is saying something to the catcher. What's being said in that moment? Is he telling the catcher to throw it back to the pitcher, or is he saying, I missed it? You know, you don't often will see a catcher, you know, in your time, did you have catchers who would talk to you? Hey, I think you missed that one, or what were those conversations like?
Yeah, it was all, first of all, based on personalities. I mean, some catchers I could talk to much, I'd be much more open with than other catchers that I wouldn't tell them anything, because they're going to turn around and just use that as ammo for a close pitch down the road. So, but a lot of times, you know, I'll always tell a catcher, I'll talk to you all night about a pitch, but do not show me up. In other words, don't hold the ball. Don't stand up. Don't drop your shoulders. Don't turn around. You know, yeah. don't make all the obvious things that are, you know, if you just throw the ball back, and I've had catchers that have enough respect that they're not trying to show you up, but they are not happy with the call you just made. And they'll throw the ball back and say, you know, boo, 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 boom, Dale, that's a good, you know, and they're, and you know, giving it to me, you know, pretty good. I mean, he's not cussing me out, but you can tell he's very aggravated, but he's doing it with his face forward, looking right at the mound. I'm doing it, of course, I'm right behind him, and we can talk without anybody really knowing we're talking, or it's not obvious to anybody that's happening, you know, that's going on. And I've had times, you know, John, I've had times where a pitch will come in and I'll ball it, and the catcher will go, ooh, you know, and throw it back, and I'll say, you know, let's say, you know, the hitter's name is, you know, John. I'll say, John, you might want to swing at that next time. So what did I just say? I just told them both, I just missed that play. Okay, I just missed that pitch. I call it, you know, I called it a ball, but that should have been a strike, and I'm just letting you as a hitter know that's not going to be a ball the rest of your at-bat. So you better swing away. And I'm also telling the catcher that, yeah, I know, you know, I was too quick on that or whatever. You can throw it there again, and I will get it. So there's ways of letting guys know what's happening. There's ways of diffusing a situation, but it all depends on the personalities too, because certain catchers you got along with, certain guys, you know, maybe not so much. And so that obviously takes into consideration also.
The, you know, this era, technology is coming and has moved into a lot of different sports, but, you know, you're going to see the spring training technology or the All-Star Game technology ultimately implemented in baseball. Where do you stand on that? You know, as an umpire who is watching technology become part of the game, I don't want to lose the human element. I don't want the games to be held up, but do you think umpires will embrace the idea that there will be a challenge here or there?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, a lot of the younger umpires, even the younger guys in the big leagues, they've been using the system for a while in the minor leagues. They're much more familiar with it. It's much more normal for them. You know, guys that have a little more experience. Danny Isonia, who I worked over 1,000 games with, was the crew chief and the plate umpire for the All-Star Game. You know, he said it was about a week before the game that they sprung it on him that, oh, by the way, we're going to use the challenge system that we use in spring training. And I asked, I said, Danny, what was your response to that? He goes, well, he goes, they didn't ask me. He said, but you know what? It's coming. And so somebody's got to be the first, you know, in a, of course, this was an exhibition game, but still in a big game. And I might as well be the guy, you know? So I think most of the game, you know, even 5 years ago, John, I think a lot of the guys were not embracing it. They were fighting it. I think a lot of them now, because they're getting just bombarded day in and day out with the technology, I think a lot of them are just saying, okay, you know what? Let's do it. Let's do it. Because, you know, first of all, we're not going to stop it. I'll make a little prediction here, John. I don't know if I'll be true or not, but I think the ball strike challenge system, the ABS system, challenge system will be implemented at the end of this year, end of this season, and will be in effect in the playoffs. That's my prediction.
Dale Scott with us, longtime Major League Baseball umpire. I have so many questions. Okay, you mentioned the diameter of the baseball. We all know that, you know, there's slight variations, but, you know, when you combine the 17-inch width of the plate, and you've got about 3 inches on that baseball either side, you're now talking about a 23-inch diameter that becomes the strike zone. As an umpire, you're looking over those baseballs before the game. You ever find ones with big variations, or does that generally get weeded out before it gets that bucket of balls gets to you guys?
Yeah, it's usually weeded out. And trust me, the second a pitcher feels a baseball, if it's not right, they're going to throw it out. You know, they're going to get rid of it. So it's every once in a while you get a strange pitcher that likes a little bit of a heavier ball or something.
Yeah.
But most of those guys are very finicky about the baseball, and so they can feel immediately if it just doesn't feel right, and they'll get rid of it.
Did you ever have one guy in particular who was particularly persnickety about, he liked raised laces on the ball, he would throw a ball back, or maybe if he found a ball he liked, he wanted it in play, like, give me that ball back?
Yeah, you know, I can't think of any names right off the top of my head, but there were a couple guys that even the catcher would say, you know, there'll be a foul ball, and I'll hand the catcher one. He'll say, you might as well, you know, give me another one too, because he's not going to want this one, because he would always throw out the first one. Always threw it out.
I love that. All right,
we used to rub up the baseballs, right, and with the mud to take the sheen off and stuff, and you know, hitters are always complaining that we're making too dark, right?
Yeah.
And then the pitchers a lot of times would complain we didn't make them dark enough, right?
So, right.
And then every once in a while you get a pitcher that's I like the lighter ball, or you know, not, when it's not that dark or whatever. And he was always the outlier, or the hitter that said, I really like the dark balls. Really? because most of the guys complain about it. But yeah, guys are very finicky about it. Thank goodness they're smart enough in the rules that a pitcher can, for no reason, get rid of a baseball, but a hitter can only ask the umpire to look at it. Because otherwise, our pace of game would be horrible with them. Everybody's throwing the baseball out.
Well, I loved the call during spring training where the one umpire, and I'm blanking on his name, he actually says, you know, surprisingly, I got the call right. You know, but I think there's a level of, you know, if you embrace the technology, you know, maybe the confidence in umpiring rises because we find out how blasted good some of these guys are.
Yeah, you know, old time story. When I first came in, I was working with a guy named Don Dankinger. I'm sure everybody's heard of it if you follow baseball at all. Don came up. His first year was back in like 1969, and he was working with veterans that actually were around when television started using a slow motion replay. They didn't have that before. And umpires were scared to death because they said, oh, my God, they're going to show our plays now over and over in slow motion, and we're going to get crucified. And what it actually did is showed how many times they're right. You know, you'll see a play at first, a bang-bang play, and go, oh, there's no way he's safe. And then they show it over, and, he did. He did beat it, or whatever. So it actually had a different effect of showing, you know, how many times they're, when you didn't think they were, they were actually correct. And this could have the same thing. I mean, the problem is, well, not a problem, but it's just, you know, it's tough as an umpire. You have a lot of confidence in what you do. I'll make a mistake. 9 times out of 10, I know the mistake is made when I make it. Not always. I've had pitches and plays where I thought I got right, and then I watch it after the game and go, ooh, maybe I wasn't right. You have that mindset, and you've had that mindset from umpire school on up. And so when you are now actually working a game and working your tail off and everything, all of a sudden there's a challenge and then you're wrong. I can see where it can eat at you a little bit. But quite frankly, I think you're onto something, John. These guys are really good, and you have a lot of things happening when a pitch comes in that the viewer gets to see. But as an umpire, you don't get any of that stuff. All you get is maybe the background and the shadows and the glare and the velocity and movement on the ball and the hitter moving and the check swing. You got catchers who might be moving or setting up late, or they might be setting up way inside and taking away your slot window or simply just not receiving the ball very well. All that stuff can happen within the confines of a pitch. And by the way, don't miss it. So having the ABS system, I think it's coming. We're not, why fight something when it's going to be here? Let's just try to embrace it and make it as, I like to say, as umpire friendly as possible to keep the game without too many delays and keep it moving and keep it smooth. And one of the things too, unless they change the way they're doing it, but right now it's 2 challenges per team. Mm-hmm. And only the hitter, catcher, or pitcher can challenge. And so, if it was, Todd O'Neill, Yankees, when I used to work, those challenges would have gone his first 2 pitches.
right.
If he didn't swing, it was a ball. I didn't know that. I didn't get that memo, but apparently that's how it was. So that makes that challenge very strategic. You've got to make sure that, if you only get 2, of course you keep them if you have good challenges. But do you want to use that early, or do you want to use it, later on? There's a strategy to that, and so that makes up another little facet of the game.
You'd probably want to use it in a situation that benefited your team or could change the game, and so I think you'd hold those, waiting for those moments. Dale Scott is with us. All right, I promise I'll let you go, but I got to know. The fans are yelling at you during the game, but the chirping that comes from the dugout, sometimes the umpire, you can tell, can't tell who it is that's chirping. Sometimes you probably know exactly who it is. How did you deal with that when you're behind the plate?
Yeah, fan noise is just noise. They're booing you, they're cheering. That's nothing. The 2 dugouts are what you're focused on. If I'm getting chirped at by dugout A, and I'm not sure who it is, like between innings, I might call my, let's say that's the third base dugout, I might call my third base umpire down and say, hey, just who's over there chirping it, or try to give me a heads up on who it is. So if I have to do something about it, I'll know. Because it's amazing how they'll be chirping, and then the moment you look over, it's like church mice. It's just fine.
Yeah.
It's everybody's innocent.
You're like the teacher in the third grade. You're like that third grade teacher. back turned to the class,
That's exactly right. My favorite is they'll be chirping, and if you don't, if you don't react to it at all or show that you heard them, they'll bring it up a notch, then you actually look over and they'll say, hey, get your ears out of the dugout, right?
They'll
say, well, wait a minute. You're chirping, and you're increasing the chirping because you want me to react. And when I do react, then I shouldn't react. I said, when they say get your ears out of the dugout, I said, wait, get your mouth off the field, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, and we saw this. And I don't want you to specifically comment on this, but we saw this in the College World Series Championship Series where the coach at, I think it was Coastal Carolina, questioned the umpire, and there apparently had been some history with this umpire, and the umpire ran him in like the first inning of the championship game, which was like situational thing. How mindful do you have to be of those situations when you're out there?
You're very mindful. And just in defense of Angel Campos, who was the plate umpire, who I worked with, I think 17 games in the big leagues. He was up and down quite a few games with AAA, but never got a job out of it. And ironically, John, he didn't get a job because in situations he didn't run guys when he should have. And then you had this thing in the NCAA championship game where he actually gave three warnings. You only need one, right? I mean, the book says you have to warn and this and that. He gave three. Why did he give three? He gave three because he was trying to stop the guy because it was a championship game. You know, he was giving him an out, just, you know, and he didn't take it. And of course, we saw what happened. But you're very cognizant of it. In the American League Division or a Championship Series in 99, Boston and the Yankees, I in game four, I ran Jimmy Williams, the manager for Boston, on a bang-bang play in ninth inning in Fenway. And, of course, I had to play it the next day. But I didn't want to run him. It's a playoff game. It's a huge game. That's the last thing you want to do. But there and before those playoffs, we have meetings with the managers and the GMs, in the locker room, and we tell them, you know, we're trying to keep everybody in the game, but there are certain things that are just automatics that you can't let go, because if I let go Team A here, what is Team B looking at? They're saying, oh, I guess we can do this now, guys, you know, because
I love it.
So you're always thinking of both dugouts when you're in a situation, and so you're very cognizant. Yes.
Dale Scott, I appreciate you. For people who want to read Dale Scott's book, you can get it on Amazon. The Umpire is out. Dale Scott, thank you for your time.
John, I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm going to go have some more berries now, all right?
There you go. Pick those berries. Dale Scott, former umpire. Leave it here.